This is Audrey Loftus interviewing John Mark Brooks in Fairbanks, Alaska.
You're better than that.
Now, John is known as Jack Brooks, and he was born in Penn Township, Cass County, Michigan, on April 7th, 1870. He first came to Alaska in 1895.
Mm-hmm.
Now Jack's going to tell you his story from there. Jack, would you tell us your story?
Well, I don't know, I just hardly know how to start.
How did you happen to come to Alaska in the beginning?
Well, there was people that was coming up here, you know, and we'd hear the miners talking, and of course we was kind of on the ramble, you know.
Uh-huh.
And now the reason I come up here is to go to work in the mine up there. There was no miners up here, you see. And they had the Comet mine opening up.
And then my father and I, we come up here to go to work in this mine, you see.
That's the gold mine?
Yeah, the Comet mine up at Burners Bay about 100 miles above Juneau.
Uh-huh.
And then I put in a little time in the mine there, and finally I wanted to go prospect. And I went on Admiral to Island and was over there for, well, I put in the rest of that summer and part of the winter, and then in January we started into the Alsac, by the name of Goldsmith and I, Joe Goldsmith and I.
Uh-huh.
And we went into the Alsac, and he's in there, the Shorty Creek. That's in beyond where Dalton's Post used to be. And then that next year I come out and we run afoul of Dalton, and we got tangled up with that cattle outfit, you know.
Oh, now this was the Dalton of the Dalton Trail?
Yeah, the Dalton Trail. And that summer, the summer of 96, we were scouting for a route to take those cattle through, you see. And in the meantime, Thorpe, he was on that train fair with 21 head of cattle. And he took those cattle to the 40 mile, you see. That's before Dawson was struck. That is Dawson.
What year was that, Jack? 96.
Well, Dawson was struck just about that time, too, you see.
Uh-huh.
But anyhow, the next year we went in that with 102 head and landed them in Dawson, you see.
How did you get them in there?
Well, the first of them went in on a big raft. The old oxen, they all went in on the rafts, you see, and then the young cattle, well, they butchered them up at Fort Selkirk. And Red McConnell had three little boats, the oil, the mail, and the floral. And they butchered those beef up there and took them down the river, you see.
Now, they came in by way of Dawson, then. How did you get them rafted in there?
Did
they come around through St. Michael?
No, they come right down the river from Fort Selkirk, you see.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh.
Yeah, they come to Fort Selkirk, they come down the river. We load them on the rafts at Fort Selkirk,
uh-huh,
you see. And then we landed in Dawson, uh-huh, and butchered them there in Dawson.
What kind of a price did you get for them, Jack?
Well, Dalton contracted the 20 head to the North American Trading and Transportation Company for 75 cents a pound.
Live weight?
Well, no, I guess not. It'd be after it's butchered, you see. Well, then things were so good, Dalton didn't want to give those cattle up, you know, for that price, you see. But the mounted police was there, you know, they tended to all that. And so, what we butchered there and cut it up over the block, you know. We got from $1.50 to $2 a pound for him, you see. And of course, then the people buy a quarter out on the creek, you know, they got about $1.50 a pound for him.
They were tired of caribou by that time.
Well, there was no caribou in the country then, not much, no. There was a few moose, but not much caribou. At the offals, the hides and the insides and the feet and heads and things like that, that all sold for $2 a pound for dog feed.
Oh.
There was thousands of dogs there those times, you know. And that paid, that landed those cattle in Dawson, you see.
Just the sale of the offals.
Uh-huh. And the rest of it was all velvet, you see. Uh-huh. So.
How many men were on these drives?
Well, there was about five of us, I guess, if I remember rightly. We had an old Indian doctor, you know, and it was really fun. When we'd be going along, you know, Dalton, he went ahead, you know. He wasn't with us very much. He was ahead all the time, you know. And this old Indian, every one of these different ones would meet him, you know, and say, "Doctor, how far is it to the next feeding place?" Well, he'd tell you, you know, and next fellow would be, "Well, doctor, so-and-so," and he'd doctor me, you know. And so when Jack, he come back, Jack wanted to know him, how he's getting along. No, he said, "Pretty good," he said, "but there's too much doctor." He said, "Doctor, doctor, doctor," all the time. Yeah, he said, "Well, that's a fun deal, doctor."
Tell us a little bit about Dalton. What kind of a man was he?
Well, he was one of the finest fellows that has ever lived on the trail. He was. And he was a great woodsman.
He must have
been. A frontiersman, you know. He was. You couldn't beat him, you know. A little small man, light complected. He's got a son here, you know.
Yes, I know.
Jim.
Jim's
daughter. Oh, a nice fellow, too, Jim.
Yes, he is.
Yeah. I was talking to him the other night up the mm-hmm. meeting.
Now, was this, you were on the first, with the first herd of cattle to come into the 40 mile, weren't you?
Well, not the 40 mile, into Dawson.
Oh, into Dawson.
Thorpe from Juno, he brought 21 head into the 40 mile the summer before, you see. Yeah. And Dalton, you know, he kind of blazed that trail out, you know, from Chilpat to Cromax. And he was going to charge toll, you see, for him and Park had quite a little trouble on the trail there. But anyhow, the Canadian, the Mounted Police, they fixed all that.
They didn't allow.
Oh, no,
they
wouldn't allow. No. No. But I don't know if that might have paid a little something, you know. I don't know, no, to avoid trouble, you see.
Yes. How many trips did you make with cattle?
That was the only trip
that
I
did. That's the only trip. Then
that's
what did you do?
Well, I left mine there on 16 above on the Nancy, and then the next year, next summer I went down to 40 miles on Napoleon Creek. And we prospected down there that fall and all that winter. And then the next year we went to Nome. That was in 1900. Went down to Nome. I was working in Nome there, over on Gold Run Creek.
Yes.
And in 1903 I come to Fairbanks.
Why did you leave Nome?
Well, there was a stampede on the Fairbanks.
Oh. And how did you make the trip between Nome and Fairbanks?
On the steamer Independence. We had got into another jackpot there. Bishopric and Bain, they had a grocery outfit, you know, a load of groceries.
Uh-huh.
And they had this old steamer, Independence. And then they had a scow a kind of a round bottom skull, and these paid our fare and loan, and everything was all ready to go when we got to Yukon, you see. Well, we got over there, and this old skull was buried in the sand, and there's about 20 of us that paid our fare, you see. And so there's nothing for it to do only to get in and dig that old skull out and jack it up and re-cork it and fix it up and load it up, and away we went up the Yukon, you know. Then when they got on the Yukon, they didn't have no crew. Only an engine, had an engineer and a mate. And then us fellows that got our fare paid, we were supposed to run the ship, you see, had to do the work. And we had to cut wood all the way up, going to Fairbanks. And we had no time going up there. But we got up all right.
You could probably walk easier than to work your way like that.
Well, it's kind of a rough walk, you know, up that way. You know.
What did you pay for fare, do you remember?
Oh, I don't know. The fare wasn't not too much, you know. They had this load of freight, you know, and the fare was all velvet to them, you see. I don't remember what it was. Well, I come down in Nome, I stopped with a fellow down there that had the ice business in Nome. And he had a set of tools, and when I got to Fairbanks, well, he'd sent those tools to Fairbanks. I had no idea going into the ice business, you know. But the tools and everything was there, and so another fellow and I, we put up ice down in Cheney and put up ice in Fairbanks, too. That way, built two log buildings, and so I peddled ice around Fairbanks there for about 7 years.
That was before M.C. Smith, then, a long time.
Well, yes, that was in 1903 and 1904, you know, and then I sold out, I had it for 7 years there, and I sold out to Gunn and Klett, and they sold to Smith. They ran it for a year, I guess, and then they sold it to Smith. And then I had wood too, you know. Used to haul wood in the winter time.
That was when the trees came right to the edge of town, before they were all logged off.
Well, it was all little wood. This was all woods here, you know. There was a few cabins scattered around in it, you know. Of course, they had the town sites staked off. And then after I got in here, it was here about 5 years, I got into politics. I was on the council there for a couple of years.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yes. And we had quite a time on the council. Now, the first year, the second year, I was elected. You know, they didn't elect a mayor those times.
Oh.
The one that got the most votes was entitled to the chair, you see, as chairman of the board, you see. And I had 113 votes more than any of them, you know. None of them wouldn't let me have it.
Why?
Oh, I don't know. They didn't like the way I done business, you know.
Oh.
You know, that's pretty rough deal, like council business.
Yes, it is. It's a job that is easy.
And if you stay with your constituents, why, you're in that.
Yeah.
That's a sure thing.
How many people lived in Fairbanks then?
Oh, I don't know. There must have been 1,400 or 2,000, something like that. Mm-hmm. There was about 22,000 feet. That's the... there was 14,000 people here. Subject to Fairbanks, you see, at that time. Of course, there was all those creeks all working, you know, drifting.
Mm-hmm. Gold cream?
Well, there was clay and dome and vault and treasure. And then on Gold Stream as well, and Pedro, you know, and all up through there. And all of those tailing piles are right there that the judges turned over, that gun had all been drifted out and fogged the steam, you see. And hoisting engines. Some of them used windows, you know.
That was before the FE went in.
That's before the FE came in here. And the country was all supposed to have been worked out, you see. And the FE came in here and started drilling, and you see what's happened.
Yeah. Jack, do you remember the Blue Parka man?
I do.
Could you tell us something about him?
Well, no, I don't know very much about him. And he held up several people out here on the trail when they was coming in, you know, people coming in. And he held them up, but they picked him up here, and I don't know what they done with him. I guess they sent him outside.
Yes.
Yeah.
I thought you might have remembered some of his exploits.
No, I don't. I don't remember. Oh, I've heard stories, you know, about him, but I didn't know much about him. I was busy here, you know, and he didn't do very much damage out here. He stuck 2-3 up, you know, and he had this blue parka on, of course, a lot of talk about it, you know. But I was telling a little girl here about those sheep, you know.
Yes, that's interesting.
Now, the old man Courtney, Jim must know, he knew Grant Courtney here, didn't he?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, his father, he started out from Pyramid Island with 680 head of sheep. And, of course, the cattleman never had no idea that those sheep would ever land in Dawson, you see. Well, anyhow, we all supposed we'd give Courtney up. And we got into Fort Selkirk, and he was in there a couple of days, you know, and he was eating breakfast one morning, and here come Courtney on a fine horse, you know, and his big white whiskers. We wanted to know about the sheep, and he said there's about 6 miles back behind you on the trail. And you know, he got all those long little sheep in there, and he lost 40 head coming in.
How many miles was that drive?
Well, no, I don't know. It must be 400 miles, I guess, or better. And swimming them rivers, you know, with them sheep.
Yeah.
We never dreamed. And he claimed he could drive sheep. He was a sheep man, you see, from Oregon. And he claimed he could go with sheep where you couldn't go with cattle, you know. But of course the cattlemen didn't agree on that, you know.
No.
But that was a surprise, my golly.
A sheep must be very difficult to herd, too, along
the... Well, they couldn't have been so bad. He was only 3-4 days behind us.
You both started at the same time.
Well, he left before he did, you know. He might have been 3-4 days late, later than what we was, you know. Yeah. And you know, there's a beaver down up there in the northern school. It must be... Well, it's a good quarter of a mile long. And it's about 14 feet high out in the middle of that flat. And it's a regular swamp hole, you know. We went through there with the horses, but, oh, it was terrible, you know. You could only go through once, you see, with a horse. And so we went to work, and we cut the brush off in this. We was 2 days there cutting the brush off in this dam, big alders, you know, and willows. And we drove the cattle right over the top of that old beaver dam.
Well, just like a bridge.
Well, it was. Yeah. It was made a good trail. It was dry, you know. And of course, on the lower end where it had been washed out, but we got down off on that all right and got through fine, you know.
You rode horses on these drives, didn't you,
Jack? Oh, yes, we had horses with us. Yeah. Well, we had dog horses and wild cattle, you know.
Were they the longhorns, or short horn? Were they short horn cattle?
Well, they were Herefords.
Uh-huh.
The white piece.
Oh, really good ones.
Yeah.
Big cattle.
Of course, then 40 had the bulldogs, and they were all kinds of, they were big cattle, you know. Some of them would dress 800-900 pounds, maybe 1,000 pounds, some of them big fellows, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We figured they'd hold the herd together, well, it was a nuisance, you know. And if it hadn't been for a little shepherd dog we had the others, I don't think we ever would have got those old oxen in there.
Now, the oxen, did you sell them as beef or as work cattle?
No, sell them for beef, you know. Oh, sure. Well, there was no work for cattle in Dawson.
No. I thought the oxen, you know, they might work them.
Well, they did. Somebody did have an ox team there, but they're too slow, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We had ahead of us, you see.
Yes.
And he contracted with Johnny Healy, the AT&T company, for 25 head at 75 cents a pound. Well, when he got them in here, well, the prices were so good, you know, Jack didn't like to let go of the cattle, you see. But the mounted police, they fixed that.
Well, that was the Alaska.
The North American Trading and Transportation Company.
That's what they wanted.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When the miners first come into the 40 mile, they couldn't buy no food, you know.
Jack Brooks
Cape. Well, now, the first men that ever come over the Diary Trail, the first prospectors, was a fellow named Goldsmith and a man with a name of, I don't think of it now. But anyhow, they come down as far as Cassiar Bar and rocked there that summer and went back to Juneau and wintered. And the next year they come down to Hood Lake and rocked there, and they had to pull out again that fall. And then they come down to the Tully, and done the same. And the next year they come to the Stewart, and they rocked there as long as they dare, and went back and had to pull out again. Well, then in the summer of 96 they come to the 40 mile. And they couldn't buy no food, they wouldn't sell no bread there, you know. And of course, you know how much they could pack over the summit, and they carry in a little boat, you know. And they had to pull out that fall. And then I think it was about 1899 that an AT&T company come in, you see, with their trading outfit. Well, from that time on, well, they had plenty of food, you see. And then they wintered there in the 40 miles. But the first 4 years, I think it was, the question wouldn't sell them anything at all, you know. They didn't want no miners, they wanted trappers and was trading for furs, you see. But after the Healy, the NAT&T come in, well, they had plenty of food, you see.
The question was about the first trader in that area, wasn't
he? I think so. He'd been in there a long, long time. There was McQuestion, and then there was Harper's up at Selkirk.
Yeah.
They were old timers there. And then there was another fit down the river farther here. I don't remember what their names are now.
Mayo?
Mayo. That's the one.
Yeah.
if a fellow only knew, you know, when he goes along and keeps a steady tab on those things, it'd be nice to have, but you go along and never think of anything about it, and after a while it's all gone, you see, you lose it.
Well, Circle was supposed to be the longest, the largest log cabin town in the world one time. And at that time, there was a lot of mining going on. And in 96, when Dawson was struck, well, pretty near everybody left Circle, you see, and went up to Dawson. The same way with the 40 mile. Everybody left the 40 mile. Well, I don't know, sir.
Were you ever an Eagle Jack?
Oh, yes.
That was near the Fort Gibbon, wasn't it? Was no fort, what was the fort right next to Eagle?
Well, Fort Reliance, that's the old Russian fort. That's where all those distances is reckoned from, you see, it's from 40 miles from Fort Reliance, the old Russian fort, 60 mile and 70 mile. That's where all those distances was from that old Russian fort used to be there.
I've often wondered where those 40 mile somewhat.
Well, that's where you got that.
Yeah.
There's 12 mile and 40 mile, 60 mile, 70 mile.
Was there anything at that fort when you came through there first?
No, it was all abandoned and gone.
How far was Fort Reliance from Fort Yukon?
Well, no, I don't know.
I know that they were both on Yukon, Fort Reliance.
Oh, yes. No, I don't know just how far it was from.
Yeah.
And about the. I don't know just how far it is from Dawson.
But then there are 60 mile, 70 mile. There's all there's where they reckon the distance from.
From Fort Reliance. You must have had some tough times coming in over the trail, like crossing the Beaver Dam and getting
there. Well, I guess it looks tough, you know, now. But we didn't, you know, it was, had to be done, we did it, you know. Then we was all young and husky and full of enthusiasm, you know, and going to Dawson and all that. But that's where I made the big mistake, was going from with those cattle. I never got a buzz with the cattle at all. Because that put me in there late. The country was pretty well staked when I got in there, you see.
Lakes of Stampede.
Yeah.
How many days were you on the cattle and bringing the cattle in?
Well, we was in, I don't just remember the date that we started, but it was around about, sometime about the 1st of June. And we landed in Dawson with that first raft, with a raft of cattle, which was the 14th of August.
Oh, 2.5 months almost.
The meat that you butchered at Selkirk and was taken down with small boats, did they smoke that a little bit, or how did they keep it?
No, it was late, you know.
Oh, you didn't butcher then until it was freezing a little bit.
No, then
cool nights.
After Caesar's all the way late in September when they butchered. They were good feed there, you know, and they just cattle fed up. In fact, the cattle picked up, you see.
Yeah.
And when they got the began to get cold, why, brother took them and butchered it and ran right down to Dawson, you see. Of course, there was no cold storage or anything like that, only the winter coming on, you see.
And Dalton's second trip of cattle, he brought those down to Circle End.
Well, I think that was the second. I know I was here, Jack come up to the house there. Jack and I used to cook fish to suit one another, you know. He was pretty tickety about cooking fish, you know, about cleaning them. I know I had one of them great big white fish had in the oven when Jack come in, you know, and he was just in line to get feed to that fish, you know. He thought that was funny. And this Hanley, I think he's either Hanley or Hanlon. He's a cattleman from Oregon. They had about 300 head. And they brought them, I think, they come into, anyhow, they unload them on the boat from Circle and come across the country with them from Circle. And he sold them out here. And then from that time on, I kind of lost track of Dalton. And he went to Valdez, you see, over in that country. And he staked that town site over there.
The Valdez town site?
I think it was Valdez. And anyhow, he got a stake out of that, and then he retired from Alaska and went off down, he was down in Oregon or someplace down there where he died, you know, later on. He was an old man when he died. You know.
This Dalton Trail was so important. Did lots of people use it beside Dalton?
Oh yes, there was quite a lot of, good many people come over it, you know.
Had there been someone through there before Dalton came?
Well,
small parties?
No, that's an old Indian trail where they come across from Chilcat to Fort Selkirk. They used to see that stick Indians, those interior Indians, they wouldn't allow them to come down to the Chilcats, wouldn't let the sticks come down to Juneau. Or down to Chilcat. But the Chilcats used to pack the molasses and beads and, you know, stuff like that into those Indians in the interior, you see. But the sticks, they didn't allow them to come to the coast at all there.
By the sticks, you mean the Stickeen Indians?
The sticky in the Elsack. In the Elsack, on this along this Dalton Trail. You know.
Actually,
they were pretty primitive people when I first went through there. One of the Goldsmith and I was in there prospecting.
Pretty poor, were they?
Yeah.
Were they friendly to the white people?
Oh, yes. No, there was a nice, they knew how to be, you know. I know my partner got hurt in there at this Dalton's boat. He laid up there for quite a long time, and every morning they'd all come up there and they'd bring salmon up, you know, and they was just nice as they could be, you know. They felt awful bad about it. But
what did Fort Selkirk amount to at that time? There was some mining going on around it.
No, I don't think so. I don't think it's Fort Selkirk. It was a Russian, an old Russian fort, you know.
Was it occupied by the Mounties when you came through there, or
was
it
abandoned? No, there was called Harper lived there.
Oh.
Old man Harper. He was still trading with the Indians there, you see.
Well, then the Mounties didn't have a post anywhere to Dawson.
The Mounties, no, not until after the Dawson was struck. Then they come in, they established themselves along the river, you see, and on the summit.
But they'd be just small units of two or three Mounties at each station, I imagine.
And St. Mary certainly, those fellows didn't know how to keep order. In all the thugs there was in Montana and Idaho and California and all along down the line, all headed for the Klondike Trail. And they come into Skagway, and they'd start up that hill, and then they'd get up, up to the border there, they'd tap them on the shoulder and tell them to go back. And there was a few of them did get by. Old Billy Doherty and Johnny Triggs and Jack Wallace and Jack Hayes. Murderers, you know, cutthroats, holdups. And they got into Dawson and they hadn't any more landed there and they shoot them on down. That's the way Eagle Club to be established. The first mayor of Eagle was Jack Hayes. He was a rounder from Butte, you know. Come up there to, you know. And Eagle was first started with, you know, well, there's about a dozen of them, you see, that got by up on the summit. But they located them about before they got down there, and they chased them on down to...
Chased them out of Dawson.
And they just went below the border, you see, and established themselves down there. And as luck would have it, they landed on a gold creek there, on the gold stream. No, the first mayor of Vigo, you know, he was a regular cutthroat, you know.
Well, Eagle was pretty well established then when the army post set up in there then.
Oh, yes. Yeah. But those bounties, they certainly did. Well, there was, you'd go along up those creeks any old time of the day or night, you know, in the summertime there, and fellas, all the gold dust they could carry on their backs, you know. Men, both men and women, coming back and forth and never a hold of them. No. But if it'd been on this side, believe me, there'd have been things. Nome was a terrible place.
That's what I heard. They had no law in there for a while, did they?
Nome was pretty well located when you got there.
Oh, yes. Well, I was 99. There's quite a bunch of them put in the winter of 1900. There was quite a few people there then. But before that, I don't know just when those Lacks did strike that anvil and those creeks down there, but it was only a year or two before 99, you know. And then the beach, I guess, was the beach. They found the beach first.
Oh, I thought it was the other way around. I thought they found the beach after.
Well, maybe it was. It might have been.
Jack, did they have any law at all there when you came?
Well, they had the court there with Noyes, the judge, and the prosecuting attorney, and all of them was in on that deal, you see.
Crooked.
Yeah. See, they all got in the pen, you know, Noyes and
yes.
Joe Woods and all those fellows. Then the king had come to the court and pardoned them. It was into that from way high up, you know. Well, the commander there, they was, the army was into it too, you see, that is, the commander's was. Because when McKinley, the little marshal come up with, Charlie Lane brought that marshal up there, and he met McKinley in the Golden Gate Hotel there. Well, he was horrified. McKenzie was to think anybody would try to arrest him, you see. And so the little fellow showed him his papers, and then he wanted to see the commanding officer. McKenzie did, you know. So they went down and saw the commanding officer, and the commanding officer looked at this little fellow's papers, and he said, McKenzie, he says, you've got to go to Frisco. He says, I'll go too if he wants me. Well, that is an awful game. You know, there's some awful rich ground down there, you know, shallow ground. And the fellow would go out there and find a claim, and it turned out good. Well, here'd come three or four fellows, and they'd chase him off of it, you see, and restake it, you know. And then he'd go to town and make a complaint or start shooting against him, and they'd put him under bonds, you know, and then appoint this McKenzie the receiver, you see. And, there was a lot of that done, and they'd have got away with it too if it hadn't been. They tried to take old Charlie Lane's ground away from him, you see, and Charlie Lane, he had a judge of his own down in California, you know. So he goes down there and he comes back and he takes a whole bunch to Frisco, you see.
I wonder why the miners didn't get together before that and do something.
Well, it was kind of funny. Yeah. But the miners there, I don't know why it is, but this country here, people are not much on that, you know. Seems if this coming up here kind of takes the fight out of them or something. There's never been very much trouble up here, you know. All the people all over the world are coming in here. Of course, there's been some. But there's no notorious tough men up in this country, you know. Like there was in Montana and Idaho and those countries.
It took a different type of man to come up here.
It is a different type of man.
Well, Jeff, you've had an interesting life. Do you have any relatives living yet?
I might have a brother, but I haven't heard anything from him for a long time.
For years, huh?
No.
Well, it's, when you've been up here a long time, you sort of lose track of them.
Oh, yes. I had two brothers up here. My third brother and my fourth brother. I had five brothers. Billy was around Canville.
Oh, Billy Brooks was your brother then?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard of him too.
Yeah.
Many years ago he was here.
Uh-huh. He was in Carstone. He had a full storage plant in Canville one time.
Uh-huh.
He was a butcher boy. That was his business, butchering. And my other brother, he just come up here for the summer. He was here in Fairbanks. He was up here for one summer. And Bill, he left here and he sold New York Life Insurance for about 14 or 15 years. And he was the only one of the family that I really knew, you know. I left home when I was 13 years old. And I went back 21 years later, and the little fella had dark was on when I left, so he was 6 foot tall. You know. And my mother, they see that I couldn't figure out whether there's any relation in any of the family.
Just felt you didn't know them.
Well, I'd been gone so long, and they'd go up their way, and I went my way, and we were different type of people entirely, you see.
Jack, did you ever strike it rich, even for a time? Did you ever find a rich...
Well, I found a rich spot or two, but it always pinched out on me.
Put the money back in the ground again.
Yeah. I've done a lot of work on Jack Wade Creek.
That's in the 40 mile.
Yeah. I ran 1,000 feet a ton on Jack Wade Creek. And then my adventures. Uh-huh. And I still think it's up there.
If you just had the time to go after it.
Yes, sir. If I had the time and I drill, I know very well. Yeah.